Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Thursday, the 15th of March. We're getting close to St. Patrick's Day, and you can tell because we have the music of my people playing here. With
my friends.
Bagosh and Bagora, Joe.
That's right. That is Lunasa. Lunasa, who is playing at the Egg tonight with their very special guest, Natalie Merchant. Natalie Merchant tonight at the Egg with Lunasa. And we'll be hearing tracks from them throughout the morning, but great music, and we thank you. But if you want to find out more information about the performance and about the great music that we'll be hearing, go to, if you want to hear about the music, wamc.org/roundtable. And if you want more information on the Egg event, you can simply go to theegg.org, theegg.org.
And you know, Joe, I just wanted to mention that Natalie Merchant is listening in on the show. I'm sure of it because I have a friend who told me that she heard some of our commentary last time. So hi, Natalie.
Yeah, she's a wonderful listener and supporter of this radio station, and we love her so much. And
we do.
I just so love listening to her music, that voice. Oh, she's
well,
so
tonight,
good.
Well, tonight, 7:30.
Now I want to go.
Okay.
I got to back her up on the banjo one time. Highlight of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're not back up. You're front center.
I didn't do particularly well, but I did my best.
Let me introduce everybody to you. We have a great show, and we have a lot to talk about, so let's go. Teresa Bourgeois is here. We missed you yesterday, but it's lovely to have you back. Thank you very much.
I'm delighted to be here. What a news day yesterday. What a news day today. It just keeps coming.
It sure does.
A representative of Teresa Bourgeois, a representative of the lower middle class.
That's right. Those who voted for Connor Lamb.
Teresa Bourgeois is the...
Just move on. We got stuff to talk
Teresa
about.
Teresa Bourgeois is the
we got nerve agents to talk about.
Our very good friend Judy Patrick is here. She is the editor of the Daily Gazette and joins us this morning, and we're thrilled to have her here. Thank you
nice
very much.
Nice to be here, Joe.
Vera Karius-Kelly is a professor in comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. She is with us each and every Thursday. Check your watches. It's Thursday.
It is indeed, and I'm here. Yes. Thank you for having me back.
Lovely to have you back, as always. Alan Chartok, let me check. Oh, yep. It's your day, too. Good morning. How are you?
Right. I was, Roselle and I went a couple of years ago to Galway, and it was turned out to be St. Patrick's Day. And we were told, that the Irish did not really act like the Americans, you know, in other words, it was more sedate. Well, that was untrue.
Or was that Americans at the pub you went to?
That's what I was thinking, Teresa. You're exactly right.
That
the possibility was it was the Americans throwing the bottles through the windows.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I think one of the best Irish celebrations I ever went to and one of the best parties I ever went to on St. Patrick's Day was in New Orleans. That is great.
Yeah.
That is great. That was very, very fun.
Well, they know how to do a party.
They know how to have to do a party. That was fun. All right, let's go to what is happening in the world. We remind you that you can be a part of our conversation, and by God, we want you to be a part of our conversation. All you have to do is write to us. It's panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. I'm going to start with a sort of an overall story here, which is that President Trump returns from a brief trip to both California and to St. Louis, I believe, to greater tumult of his own making in Washington, is the headline from the Los Angeles Times this morning. President Trump was only out of Washington for 36 hours this week for an overnight trip to California, and on Wednesday to St. Louis, he returns to even more tumult than he'd left, largely the fallout of his own actions on his way out of town. Besides creating heightened uncertainty throughout his top ranks about the standing of major advisors, even speculation about a purge, Trump also confronts elevated concerns in his party for its congressional majorities after Republicans apparently lost a special election in which he was an underlying issue. Trump set much of the new round of chaos in motion on Tuesday morning with a tweet announcing the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, followed by his comments to reporters as he left the White House for California, suggesting that he's ready, perhaps, to replace other cabinet secretaries. Alan.
No, I defer to the other political scientist in the room. Vera Kelly, your time.
Well, all I can say is we should probably do a study on the kinds of linguistic choices journalists make. Tumult, chaos,
I love that
mayhem,
word. Tumult,
instability. What else can we think of? I mean, this is quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, someone at one point was keeping track of how many times Chuck Todd used the word chaos at the start of
Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, and it was many. Yeah, it's clear, though, that President Trump does enjoy, or his style of leadership does encourage this chaotic kind of mm-hmm. approach to the comings and goings and the uncertainty about your position in the office. And he seems to think that that's an effective way mm-hmm. of running. Apparently his business now isn't an effective way to run a government or a whole country or the most important country in the world, in my mind.
He said that, I believe, 2 days ago. He said, I enjoy the chaos. I like it. Mm-hmm. Well, great.
I'm not sure how you effectively run a government office that way when you don't have time to really prepare plans or policies, and your entire staff constantly worries about maybe having a job or not having a job, or your boss might be there or might not be there, or there might be upcoming announcements for your boss to be removed. I mean,
or you get a warning from John Kelly to watch Twitter.
I mean, it's
for poor Rex Tillerson.
Extraordinary to think about.
And by the way, let's just stop and comment on that for a second. Hmm. Did you ever think you would say those words?
Oh,
poor Rex Tillerson.
Well, I'm actually not feeling too sorry for him. I was not a big fan.
It's a good point.
He took apart the State Department, and I never liked the man. So au revoir is what I say. Do well. Move on to the next
Don't let
horror
the door.
Show.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, but I do agree with. I think if you serve our country, even if you don't do a good job of it, if you serve our country, there's probably a better way to let somebody know that you've moved on than having mm-hmm. to either.
The main critique I have of this way of firing people is that the bench for replacement will get shorter and shorter, because once highly qualified people figure out that they're going to be treated with such disrespect, who is going to step forward and run the State Department? Because we know that if Pompeo is going to run it, then he's not going to last for more than a year. Who's next?
Yes, and journalists, Vera, are really doing a good job now about certain things. I mean, it didn't take more than a few hours before we knew that both his choice for CIA and mm-hmm. and for the Secretary of State's job were both have been both labeled as torturers.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost as if journalists are prepared to look at who's below and who's coming up, and they're writing their stories ahead of time, don't you think?
Like obituaries.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, of course, and Teresa, you have Rand Paul coming out yesterday against the Pompeo nomination. You have to wonder if all of the Democrats, how many Democrats have been, not many, but a few Democrats mm-hmm. have been supportive of the nomination, or at least have had good things to say about Mike Pompeo. But you do wonder, they don't have a lot of wiggle room, do they?
No, you don't have a lot of time. I think the problem, if you step back and understand what the problem with all of this is, on the domestic front, a week from tomorrow, March 23rd, we need to have the budget resolved. So remember, there was a threat of a shutdown a little over a month, 6-8 weeks ago, and the Congress, the House and Senate, Republicans, Democrats, came to an agreement and to keep the government open. But that was just a temporary agreement. They agreed on the outlines of a budget, but they had to fill in the details. And they have not succeeded in doing that yet. And they don't have a White House to negotiate with, because the White House is in chaos. So, you know, the question is, what's the why does that matter in everyday people's lives, the White House being in chaos? Well, it matters because you need to resolve these basic economic issues. You need to understand, what's our funding going to be for housing programs? Are you going to cut Medicare and Medicaid? And, you know, how are you going to fund health care research, and on and on and on? You know, those are the basic decisions.
But Teresa, don't you think that what they've done in the past will be what they do now, which is a CR, continuing resolution? You know, it's very interesting about the Republican approach to this stuff. You would think that in the past, there are certain groups, because you've teachers get raises and things like that, in which, you know, things are going to – things have to go up. But they won't this way. But a CR means you don't get it.
But a continuing resolution keeps the doors open, but it doesn't allow you to really address the basic problems of our country.
They don't care.
If you do a CR, that's month-to-month budgeting. It's very costly. For the Defense Department, they've said over and over, whether Republicans or Democrats in charge, it's very hard to do forward planning on month-to-month budgeting. It's very costly and it's ineffective. We need an infrastructure program in this country. We need it to create jobs and we need it to deal with our bridges and our roads and our telecommunications infrastructure, so on and so forth. That's something we could come to an agreement on. You don't do that if you have a CR, if you have month to month. We saw yesterday with these I know we'll get to it later, but these marvelous students, just so heartwarming. You know, if you're despairing about America, just listen to those students and it'll brighten your day. Serious questions around all the aspects of violence in schools, mental health, all of that. You saw in the votes with Connor Lamb, leading issue in that was health care. How are we going to fund health care? Those decisions are all wrapped up in a budget, and you need a White House engaged with the Congress to come to some consensus on that and not just keep kicking the ball down the road. And then, as Vera, you can speak to this better than me, but what happens when you have a chaotic firing of the State Department? It rattles our allies and it emboldens our enemies. It just shouts weakness. And where was Tillerson? He was in Africa, meeting in various countries, trying to do damage control about the president denigrating Africa. So when the Chinese are in Africa, you know, locking up minerals and building up alliances, he's got to be pulled out of Africa home to be fired by a tweet. You know this better than me.
I mean, this is exactly one of the major issues in foreign policy. The Chinese are very active in Latin America and very active in Africa. We have created such a foreign policy vacuum by disincentivizing senior diplomats with decades-long experience to stay within the State Department. We have many retirements. We have many people leaving the State Department. We have an enormous gap now between experienced younger staff being able to rise to high-level positions. Tillerson was trying to basically dismantle the State Department by not filling jobs. And now, what will the future hold when we have enormous numbers of vacancies? Nothing but a vacuum in our foreign policy. And who replaces our foreign policy? The military. The military is now present in so many countries, and they're supposed to do the job of fighting and doing diplomatic work.
And what signal does it send when you name the head of the CIA as the head of the State Department?
And somebody who has endorsed the use of torture.
But I think what you're all missing here, I haven't heard from Judy on this, but the one thing that
she was going to cover it, but go ahead.
The one thing that you're all missing here is you got to get inside Trump's head to understand what this is about. If he does endorse chaos, if he does like it, if he does want everything to go to hell, then all of those great things you just said, Teresa, are true. Every one of them. Nevertheless, he doesn't care about that.
He cares about him. Leading the country is not about him. Leading the country is about the American people. And that's why, but there are implications to the chaos. We've talked about it before. You know, he's just trying to win the news cycle. Winning the news cycle is not governing. And do the American people are rejecting it. You saw that in Pennsylvania on Tuesday. They're rejecting it. What they care about health care. They care about health care. And what's happening to health care, while we're all paying attention to who's being fired and who's doing what, over at the Health and Human Services, they're dismantling health care. And up in Speaker Ryan's office, they're methodically just needle prick by needle prick dismantling health care. They couldn't get a big bill through, so they're doing it administratively, and they're undermining it bill by bill. If you have a pre-existing condition in this country, boy, you're back in trouble again because they're passing these junk health care bills. It's going to make it impossible for people with pre-existing conditions to get health care coverage and so many other things.
Well, let me put it this way. I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
I wish I was wrong.
No, I hope you're right. In other words, I'm concerned that people don't really know that the base of the Democratic Party, for example, doesn't get out and vote. You say, well, they're concerned about health care. Are they concerned enough to move their behinds to go and vote?
The polling out of Pennsylvania.
Yes,
out of
that, I'm hearing you.
The polling out of Pennsylvania was the leading issue that people voted on was health care.
Okay. So you go around and you say
Republicans and Democrats. The reason they voted for Lamb was health care.
I think the reason they voted for Lamb, no matter what Lamb says, because he denies this, was Trump. I think people are disgusted with him. He's made a fool of himself.
But what he's doing to health care. But also, it was interesting that they also, the Republicans, a week out, they pulled ads about the tax bill because it wasn't working. Them promoting their tax bill, the people did not believe that
people
the tax bill was for
well,
them.
Well, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but I suspect what they really were saying was they did their research, they did their polling, and they said, you know, the one thing that'll get us some votes is going after Nancy Pelosi. Disgusting, but that's what they said. And that's what they ran the whole campaign on. Let's get rid of Nancy Pelosi.
Right, and that didn't work.
Yeah, you're saying that's what Connor Lamb ran on?
No,
the
that's what the Republicans.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, because Connor Lamb rose mostly talked about Medicare. We had to stabilize Medicare. Mm-hmm. We had to stabilize Social Security. We had to work together. We have to govern. We have to find compromise. Mm-hmm. We have to.
All right.
Yeah, and so on that note, I just wanted to say very quickly,
10 seconds.
We see the first women's shift away from Trump, and we see trade unions shifting again away from Trump. So this is the two markers I think we have to watch.
We'll hold there. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. You know, no good deed goes unpunished. From our understanding, the name of the group that we're playing is Lunasa. Lunasa. Although we've been getting letters from listeners who say it's Lunasa. I don't know.
I thought that's what you just said.
No, Lunasa or Nasa.
Uh-huh.
You see? And we're getting different, however you pronounce it. It's Lunasa, and they're going to be performing at the Egg tonight with Natalie Merchant.
I love being in print and not in radio.
Maybe it's different dialects.
Yeah, and they're going to be performing at the OG.
That's funny.
Theog.org.
Is it a fried OG or
a
boiled
right,
OG?
Yeah, right, I don't know. But anyway, we're not doing any of this intentionally.
It's going to be good.
That's right. Thank you, Teresa. It's going to be good no matter what it is. All right, we have letters, and let's get to those. Just a quick reminder, and because every once in a while we just have to remind all of you, hey, if you're right every day, don't. If you give other people a shot, that's always nice. Also, please pre-read your letters, and so we know what you're saying and if it's, you know, it's actually in English. And
if you're from Pennsylvania 18th District, we want to hear from you.
Well, yeah.
You think anybody's listening from
just
there?
Today.
No.
We carry to Pennsylvania, but I don't think that far.
I doubt
the west part of the state.
Who knows?
Let's go.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Dean says, tortures, ? In light of the fear of Trump as a tyrant in the making, it is very, very worrisome that he nominated torturers to two high-level positions. Does anyone hear echoes of Duterte?
Yeah, really. We're all deeply worried. Anybody who cares about human rights and, civil liberties is deeply concerned about these nominations.
You know what's been interesting to me? Gina Haspel is the nominee. Mm-hmm. And the consistency with which people who know her, people who've worked in the CIA or the State Department and other places, have spoken out in her defense.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much Pompeo, but her. It's been fascinating, and almost with the one core message is that she was, and I hate to say, just carrying out orders, but this was her directive,
right.
And that's her role. Mm-hmm. And at the time, people were supportive of that. I'm not saying it's the right thing. I'm just saying it's been interesting to me about how they really want an insider who understands the CIA because they think that this will help settle the CIA.
And who'll get move up easily without having too much... too much.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Well,
but
that's right, because John McCain has now said, I'm going to vote against both of these people.
Yeah. Right. And I'm not just, I'm not endorsing her at all, but I'm just saying I've been fascinated by the, you know, the clarity of the voices in support of her from people who have known and worked with her.
And I mean, she is, in a sense, an insider, deeply respected. She's good at her job. However, the issue with her work in Thailand, and you know, with extraordinary renditions and overseeing a torture center, I mean, that really is a profound problem for her promotion, I think. I actually don't believe she will be
confirmed.
You know, confirmed.
You may be right. I forget what the rules are in the Senate. You're the Senate person.
We can put a hold. You can privately put a hold on.
So that if John McCain really means business, that's
he can put a hold.
It just takes one.
He or Rand Paul, any of those could put a hold.
And I think, I mean, McCain better put a hold on it because, I mean, that is so somebody who stood up against torture, somebody who has experienced torture, somebody who knows what we're talking about, not in the abstract sort of saying, yes, yes, that works for us. No.
And what he's saying.
What he's saying is very, I mean, is
what he's saying is if we do it, they'll do it.
It puts our people at risk, right.
And, I mean, the problem is the more we sort of endorse people with those kinds of backgrounds, the more it's going to happen to our military personnel arrested or civilians
grabbed up.
So now just a devil's advocate question here, because I've been, you know, grappling with this as I listen to people whose views I respect, who've been really endorsing her. So I'm not, should she have resigned rather than do the work?
Yes, of course.
So you think she should have just stepped down from the CIA?
Absolutely, or asked for a different appointment, assignment, something else.
Something different, yeah.
I mean, she shouldn't have agreed to it. A principled person does not agree to overseeing this within a democratic framework. I'm sorry, but that is unacceptable.
I mean, I think I share John McCain, Senator McCain's view that if, you know, we shouldn't do it because it's morally wrong and because it puts our own people at risk.
Well, let's see how much of this comes out. Let's see how much of this comes out in confirmation hearings, whether or not the public will even get a chance to hear some of the things she's done.
Oh, they will. Because if you're going to have a confirmation hearing, as Teresa, our Senate expert, will tell us, the minority gets to go to town. You can't tell the minority they can't ask questions.
The question is, will they even want to have a hearing on this? Because if they don't think they can win, why would you have a hearing? Because if you do have a hearing, the questions are going to be very challenging for both of them.
Yeah.
And separately, I just think there are a lot of issues. It puts people in the State Department at risk if you have a CIA person running the State Department, because there's always been that tension with State Department people overseas, where everybody knows that the CIA mixes into the State Department.
That's correct.
And
Valerie Plume, remember
Valerie Plume, for instance. And and so I think that it's going to raise a lot of concerns. I don't think there's ever been... Has there ever been somebody from the CIA who's run the State Department?
So I'm hearing from you. You don't think they're going to get confirmed.
Well, we have a president who ran the CIA. Mm. Didn't we?
Oh, yeah,
Bush. George Bush, yeah.
George Bush ran the CIA, but he didn't run the state to go from CIA to state.
Yep.
I don't know, but the problem with the situation with Pompeo is that, you know, he comes out of the Congress, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't know if they get confirmed. It depends on what Rand Paul decides to do.
All right, more
back
letters.
To letters. Okay, morning.
Good morning.
Breaking news on CNN and MSNBC. Trump admits to donors last night that he lied straight to Trudeau's face concerning trade deficits.
Yes.
How can anyone in the world trust this buffoonery? He lies about lying. Simply disgraceful and totally embarrassing. I'm afraid we are in dire straits and in danger. Do you think?
Yep.
Lisa. Okay.
The Atlantic magazine reporter got a hold of a tape from where he reportedly was joking about lying, about using false data about trade agreements and the tariffs.
Yeah. And Michael says, "Good morning, panel."
Good morning, Michael.
And Michael, good morning to you.
Top of the world.
You guys
top
don't
of the
top, top of the morning.
You guys
top of
don't
the
get the shtick. Everybody, when they say good morning, we all have to say, you know, good morning, you know. So
what is Michael?
We missed rehearsal this morning.
That's the shtick. Okay. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
The kids don't realize it yet, but the images from yesterday's walkout, specifically the image of the word enough, will go down in history next to the images of the Tiananmen Square man and the girl putting the flower in the rifle. These kids are unbelievable.
See, I've got goosebumps
they are.
Just thinking
they
about
are.
That.
They're so articulate on TV. They express their position so well. They're not hooked when, you know, somebody says something outrageous or hostile towards them. They stay calm and focused on their political agenda. It is a true pleasure, and it's impressive to see them.
You know, I was talking to my my brother-in-law, Weston, who's a assistant superintendent of a school in our region, and he was talking about what they went through yesterday of getting all the students out of the high school, and he said, but they put it on the student leaders to come up with a program, and he said it was just the speeches that were written that with little or no input from the school were beautiful. That they had decided that they would read each name lost in Parkland, and there would be a chime afterwards. He said it was gorgeous. He said the teachers were just crying, by what the kids had done because they had given them this time, and they didn't fritter it away. They really made something out of it, and I think you saw that in the schools across the country that participated yesterday.
So I want to talk about Justin Blackman, if I can.
Sure.
North Carolina student, 16 years old. He got up and walked out and got outside and realized that he was the only person who had walked out from the 700 people in his school. But he stayed outside for 17 minutes. He recorded it and posted on Twitter and ended up getting more than 1 million views because he talked about why he was out there, why it was important. And so they had him on CNN. Don Lemon had him on last night. Mm-hmm. And this young man said, it had me in tears. He said, well, why would you do that? He said, well, those 17 people couldn't talk. And if I had been killed, I would hope somebody would have spoken for me. And I felt I needed to go and be their voice because somebody has to speak up. Oh, my goodness. It was just so simply powerful. Here, I'm going to cry again. Yeah. It was just like these kids get it that, you know, guns... We've got to choose kids' lives over guns.
In Schenectady, they read off 17 names of the Parkland victims, but then they read off 17 names of Schenectady kids who had been killed by guns.
I thought what Columbine did was beautiful, too. They did the 17 who were killed, and then they did the 13 who were killed in Columbine. Mm-hmm. They made it a half hour and did that. I thought that was it was beautiful as well. More letters, then we'll take a break.
Aaron says, deregulating Wall Street. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Please talk about the Democrats who made it possible to overturn the modest reforms of Dodd-Frank. Only 10 years after the biggest crash since the Great Depression, this is the biggest story of the day and a real reason Trump could win again. There you go.
And it's a story that got buried.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to happen, then I thought it wasn't going to happen, and then it happened, and nobody knew because we were all focused on Stormy Daniels, the departures from the White House, and all the other craziness.
Well, as the letter indicates, there are certain Democrats, like lots of Republicans, who will go where the money is. It's that simple.
Well, I think it is a little more complex, and I am not a student of this. I think Aaron's on tomorrow. Maybe he is much more qualified.
Aaron will not be on tomorrow, but we'll get him next week. That's
if
all right.
There are other people much more qualified than me. But there was some concern. I'm a big supporter of Dodd-Frank. But there was some concern, even among those who were big supporters of it, that like everything else, it needed some adjustments.
That's right.
Particularly for the smaller banks, because it became so burdensome on the smaller banks that it had the unintended consequences of them falling under the weight of it and getting gobbled up by the bigger banks. So in an effort to say, you know, you don't want anything to be too big to fail, it became, it was creating this unintended consequence. That's why some Democratic senators from rulers, now this is not all of them, but some of them from more states with a lot of smaller banks felt compelled, but mixed in with those needed changes are onerous and bad change, you know, of backsliding. So that's the problem. How do you get to the point where you can make the changes that are needed to reverse the unintended consequences without backsliding? And so, more letters.
Let's take a break. Well, actually, we'll hold off. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll do more letters and we'll have more conversation about other topics making news. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. And to our roundtable panel is the name of the program. Alan Chartok is here, Vera Karius-Kelly, Judy Patrick, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, okay. Great. I thought you were going to make a proclamation. I thought, like, hear ye, hear ye. Yes, okay. But you have letters, and that's good enough. We'll start there.
David wants to talk about Russian nerve gas. How does it make sense for Russia to have used a weapon that leads directly back to them? Pride, stupidity, or what? There's another possibility. It ain't pride. It's just a warning that this is what we do to people who we don't like. That's real simple, and we'll get away with it. That's called the sin of arrogance.
Yeah, it's just basically sort of a message to the West saying, hey, we can meddle in all kinds of things, and what are you going to do about it?
And we'll continue
it's
to
challenge.
Lie. Yeah. Okay, and Dick says, PA special election. The Pennsylvania special election results show once again that even though President Trump may fool some of the people all the time, he can't fool all the people all the time. And the November election is coming. Now, what is interesting in that Dick's point is that in that, is it the 17th or 18th district in Pennsylvania? You said it 18th before, but I forget. In any case.
Where the election was?
Yes.
I thought it was the 18th. Yes?
Did I say 17th?
No, you said 18th.
I thought it was
18.
Yeah, 18. 18. Okay, all right.
I believe so.
So in the 18th, and I know you'll check it on your magic machine, Joe, is that he won, the Democrat won by, what,
yes,
a handful of votes, right? But what's
almost 700.
What'd you say?
Almost 700 votes.
So that's a handful in politics.
No, that's true. Yeah, I agree with you.
But what's interesting is that district is going to get better for the Democrat because now the state court has outlawed gerrymandering and is going to has drawn district lines, which will make that district even more amenable.
Right, it basically goes away, and they're redrawing. But what's fascinating to me is how much the Republicans invested in this race, knowing that it was going away. What it was well past $12 million.
All maybe, about Trump,
and to try to hold this and think about all the things that he did. Some would argue that the timing of the tariffs was that he went in twice. His sons went in. And still outspending Lamb, 4-1?
Yep.
Anthony says, turbulent news end. Panel, Trump starts
brush fires.
Thank you for that. Panel starts brush fires for the purpose of keeping our eyes away from the forest that he's burned down. And who will work for him? His lackeys. And that's from Anthony.
That is probably correct. And the lackeys are getting weaker and weaker in terms of their qualifications because, as I mentioned, you know, it's shameful to be fired via Twitter, so it'll be fewer qualified people in the White House, I fear, the longer we see this kind of revolving door.
But again, that's why I think we have to stay focused. Mm-hmm. We have to really ask what's in the health bill, what are the funding levels, and, you know, while the U.S. is dramatically increasing funding for defense, the Russians are taking a whole different approach to defense, right?
Yes.
One we should not follow, but
Melinda says, fired. Comey learned he was fired while on stage in California from TV News. Tillerson learned he was fired from a staffer's Twitter account while flying home from Africa. This is all just a reality TV show for Trump, except it's not, says Melinda.
Well, yes, Melinda. That's right. That is the way it is.
Right. It seems like the only time he fires someone face-to-face is on The Apprentice.
Yeah.
Where it's scripted.
Where it's scripted and it's not. Yeah. Right. It is.
All right. Let's go to some other topics in the moment that we have. While we're talking about hiring and firing, let's talk about Larry Kudlow for a moment. Trump has picked CNBC's Larry Kudlow as a top economic advisor. You will remember he was a member of the Reagan administration. He has now been a regular TV commentator. He will serve as the next director of the National Economic Council. And, this goes into the fact. Although interesting about Kudlow is that he's been a Trump fan, but he's also been a critic and weirdly has been a critic of the tariffs, which got Gary Cohn ultimately fired, so figure that one out.
And Trump may actually be very sensitive about this because he said, quote, I like people who disagree with me. Now, the reason he said that is he's looking at the polling, and he knows that people don't like the fact that he's just firing at will.
Right. One thing that I think is very interesting, I think Kudlow got hired for the reason that he's kind of a TV personality, because I think Trump has felt that his people have not been as outspoken on television the last few months. I think, you know, his cabinet is too withdrawn, too quiet, so now he needs a personality on TV to defend him. Interesting, however, since Kudlow is a big personality, when will we see the big clash of the two personalities? So I don't think Kudlow will be around for long. Mm. Not only does he support free trade globally, he's opposed to a number of the tariffs proposed by Trump. He's also going to be perceived by Trump as a potential TV competitor. So I don't foresee this as a long-term solution.
Everything you just said makes a great deal of sense to me.
So we'll see. I give the man 6 months to a year. How's this?
Well, but you wouldn't give anybody in that administration.
I'll give him 6 months. How's that?
The one guy, I'm sorry, Judy, but the one guy they have a real problem with is Jeff Sessions. Because earlier in the game, the Republicans in the Senate said, do not fire Sessions. We will not allow the appointment of another attorney general. We're going to be watching that one. Now, they seem to be pulling back. The Republicans in the Congress and the Senate seem to be saying, okay, we'll stop an investigation, an ongoing investigation, because, you know, basically you want us to. And in the Senate, we're going to lose control of the Senate unless we do what you want.
So can I bring up this story? And we just have a couple of minutes before we go to a break. But when we talk about Jeff Sessions, so Jeff Sessions right now, and let me know if I'm wrong on this, but it seems that there is a test being put on the plate of Jeff Sessions when it comes to former FBI Deputy Chief Andrew McCabe. Mm-hmm. So Andrew McCabe is going to retire on Sunday, right? Sunday.
Yep.
Retire on Sunday, receive his pension, goes off into the night, end of the story. Well, Jeff Sessions now, the president, has been very critical of Andrew McCabe and is saying that he should be fired prior to that, which would essentially lose him his entire life pension.
But you don't lose your pension when you get fired. Your pension is guaranteed. I've heard these stories, and as someone, I mean, your pension is your pension. You don't lose your pension.
I don't know, Judy. It's been all over the
I don't know. The New York Times.
I think they're incorrect. Your pension is earned. We know this with state politicians.
I think in order to qualify for the pension, you have to vest over a certain amount of time. And what they want to do is get rid of him before he vests.
That's true. But if he's vested, he has his pension.
So I will look that up. But in the meantime, let us discuss what Jeff Sessions will do in this case, because he has been very outspoken lately. He has said his piece and defended himself against the president. Jeff Sessions has. And so what does he do now when the pressure is being put on him by the president to fire this guy? Will he or won't he?
You know, it's a tough one. You know, one of the things that Sessions has been pretty adept at, you know, is dancing the dance, and saying there are times I have to disagree with him, there are times I have to carry his water. You know, I can predict what will happen, but I think it's disgusting, and the American people are not going to like it because they don't want their pensions taken away, and they can see there, but for the grace of God goes I. How unfair that is.
Can anyone, and not that anything has to make sense, but can anyone help me out as to the reason for the firing is that he wasn't forthcoming for the information in regards to the inquiry into the Clinton Foundation story?
I thought the ostensible reason was that he somehow disseminated information he wasn't supposed to and then lied about it.
Yeah, that was one of the accusations. But Joe is also right that this is one of the things that they're saying happened.
Which,
here,
by the way, since the beginning of the FBI, people have, because he talked to a Wall Street Journal reporter. So since the beginning of the FBI, people have leaked. So do you make, I don't know.
Do two wrongs ever make a right?
Well, no, but do you fire the guy and
you can.
Well, obviously you can, but it seems, I mean, obviously that the also to me it's obvious that you're doing this as a vengeful move to the guy to hurt him on the way out.
Well, that's I don't think the American people really feel that. I think that's correct. I'm sorry, Vera.
Yeah, no, I was thinking for Sessions, this is going to be very difficult to decide what to do, how to go forward, because he doesn't want to come across as a lackey.
He doesn't want to lose his job either.
He doesn't want to lose his job, but he might actually get some backing from Congress on this issue, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the other message going out there with this, if this happens, is don't talk to the press, which is dangerous. We want government officials to talk to us whether they're supposed to or not.
All right, let's take a break. Ray Graff has news. We will do that. And when we come back, we'll continue. We have a whole bunch of other stories to talk about. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. I'm sorry we were waiting for Alan to finish a pretzel.
what do you want to say?
What do you mean? Wait.
Because I'm going to go to letters, and I just want to make sure. You want to go swig a coffee there first?
All right.
All right. We'll get it all good. This is Radio 101, folks.
We'll get this. We're just telling letters. There's one guy who writes about, you know, that stuff.
What did the person write on the top letter?
Oh, I'll just tell you right now.
Thank you.
George writes, firing and more.
All right.
Hi, panel.
Hi.
As far as anyone taking offense to how Tillerson was fired, I'm thinking Tillerson couldn't care how long as he got out of there. If he doesn't like the tweet firing, he could just have said, I'll let the press say it to my face, or similar. But the tweets, the whole media is letting this president take the lazy way to rule. And please don't say tweets are newsworthy because the press tweets it, because they're not. Well, I don't agree with a lot in this letter. Can I start and tell you where I don't agree?
Yeah, go.
Okay. So, Tillerson doesn't care that he was fired. Did you watch him on his speech? He was literally shaking.
He was emotional.
He was completely disrespected, and that's a man who's not used to that.
Well, I also think he, despite all of his weaknesses, he does believe in the basic decorum of the office.
Yes.
And I thought his administering of the State Department wasn't very good, but I thought that statement was. I thought that was a very powerful
statement. I just feel that if you go and you serve your country, I mean, whatever we're going to say about this presidency and this administration, the man came in for over a year, served the country in one of the highest levels jobs in the government. And I think you deserve, like, as we respect the presidency, the office of the presidency, I think we respect that office as well, and just don't think somebody should be treated that way, especially when there have been issues, but you know, there are ways of doing it, and saying, look, we're moving on, and having a ceremony or whatever. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot more sense.
And understanding it's not just between the two of them, right? Again, Vera, you're better on the global issues than me, but it sends a signal to people all over the world.
Am I the only one in this room who remembers the Eisenhower administration? Because
personally, or in
I liked Ike.
I'm reading a book about the Eisenhower administration. Does that count?
Yes, because remember that Ike loved to appoint these kinds of guys to his cabinet. You know, the superannuaries, the guys who were really very high up in corporations and stuff. And so, you know, Tillerson would have been one of those guys. But Vera, I'm not sure I agree with you. I don't like his politics, but at least he knew enough to stand up to the president.
I don't think he stood up, except for the last few weeks.
No, he did.
I mean, once in a while. Well, he called him something. I think he called him a moron. He called him a moron, and that was the problem. And we knew he was on the short list for being fired anyways. We're just waiting for when it was going to happen.
Somebody can check me on this, too, but wasn't he the only one when we had the sycophant club, when everybody was going around the table from all his cabinet secretaries and telling him?
Not.
He was the only one who did not kiss his shoes and other
parts
of his body.
I think
he
that was true.
He pushed back directly and indirectly repeatedly. Okay. What he didn't do is he didn't understand how to manage the State Department.
Yes,
but mm-hmm. I don't. Yeah, but don't disagree with you at all as far as the.
Yeah, no.
The,
I mean, I just.
And here I'll get some resistance from the panel.
Oh, can I just say something else about that letter too? I also disagree with the notion that I think in our environment, I don't think this has anything to do with Donald Trump, but I think in our culture, in our environment, and where we are right now, that yes. Twitter is news. If you are the president of the United States
and policies,
you send out a tweet, if you are a governor and you put out a tweet to tell people to seek shelter because of a storm coming in, that is news. So I think this idea of people not using what the latest technology is misguided.
I agree with you, Joe.
But I just hope that bosses around the world don't start firing people.
Can you imagine?
With
well, that's
tweets.
Right. No, that's absolutely
that
correct.
Normalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. David says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning, David.
This is not about Trump. This is about the Republican Party. They can stop all the chaos anytime they don't want to. I have said it 1,000 times before these microphones, and I'm going to say it again. They are scared to death for their political offices. They're afraid they'll get primaried.
They're afraid
that Trump will come after them. And being senator is more important than doing the right thing.
Yeah, but
maybe they're less scared today.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we're beginning to see a slow change. I think this Pennsylvania 18th district election was another test case. And I think people will really carefully study now these outcomes of these special elections and say, well, maybe we need to rethink our strategy. Well, I think it's the beginning of the major change that we're going to see.
I think you're going to see more. You already have 40-plus Republicans saying they're not going to run next year or this year. I think you're going to see more soon decide not to.
Susan says, comment, a dear friend once warned, the closer the investigation gets to Trump, he will start to get radically more unstable, narcissistic, and insecure. He is very dangerous.
He is, because what my greatest fear is that he's going to start some war to redirect the country. And that is what I'm afraid
of. He's going to wag the dog.
He's going to wag the dog. Iran, North Korea. I mean, we have two options here that are really profoundly frightening.
So, Victor says, Trump. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Trump did not admit lying. He bragged about lying. And that's from Victor.
Yeah.
All right.
He joked about it, which is pernicious.
Amy
says, thinks this is just normal behavior, just like firing people via Twitter.
He doesn't understand the presidency and governing.
Amy says, new laws. Good morning, dear friends.
Good morning.
So happy to hear the New York State Senate passed new legislation regarding sexual harassment laws. Can you help me understand what the next steps are when these new laws and when these new laws are going to be enforced? Best regards, Amy.
All right. Anybody?
Well, no, that's a very interesting point. Yeah. There's an ethics committee on both sides of the houses. Very little, if anything, ever happens as a result of that. So you can pass a law. You can say, we're going to set up a commission. We're going to set up a committee. But if there is no will to do it, and there never has been in the state legislature, I suspect it'll come to little.
Yeah.
Unless somebody is absolutely outrageous and then becomes a test case and they say, oh yeah, well, we did it because this guy was a fool. Okay, and Michael says, good morning, esteemed panel.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Esteemed. Article today in the Washington Post says that in a fundraising speech, Trump boasted that he insisted to Canada's prime minister that the U.S. runs a trade deficit with Canada, but admitted he didn't know and had no idea if this was true. In reality, we run a trade surplus with Canada. This is just says it all about our president. And James says, good morning. Simply amazing. These students are keeping the topic in the news. However, I feel there should be voter registration booths and information at all these locations. They won't change, threaten with their votes. Also, what is the chance of possibility of voter age being bumped to 21 silence these young people?
No.
That won't happen.
No, that won't happen, no.
But on voter registration?
Sure.
I read and heard repeatedly
that they were doing it.
That they were voter registration efforts at many of these school walkouts. And when you listen to the young people, over and over and over again, they talk about the importance of registering, mm-hmm. the importance of voting, and they say, you know, you do this, mm-hmm. we will see you in November. They are intensely focused on voter registration.
And you know, there are a lot of proud parents out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah. they do vote.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. Right, Alan. That's a really important point.
Well, I couldn't get what you said out of my head yesterday, Alan. I was thinking about it as I was watching the C-SPAN ran a whole series of these various walkouts yesterday. But that idea of, you know, anything you... any civics class that you have, this beats that. You know,
that.
I mean, you can't get better than this when you're teaching kids the power of democracy and what this country is about.
And they'll never forget it.
And
can I mention something else, which
absolutely.
I thought is very interesting? There have been some high schools where administrations have threatened students with suspensions,
sure.
if
yes.
they walked out of the classrooms,
yeah.
right? And one of the other threats was to high schoolers that if they get suspensions and it'll affect their record,
their permanent records
would be affected, and college campuses or colleges would not recruit them or take them. Now, many college admissions offices have pushed back very directly and said, no, in fact, we like students that are politically engaged, that are leaders, that show involvement in their communities and in the political process. So, in fact, it turns out that college campuses will actively recruit those kinds of students that have organized and have led an effort in all states. So this is a beautiful pushback now that we see, and communal support for these students.
And I'm wondering, I have not heard, and has anyone heard reporting on this? I did hear the stories mm-hmm. of various administrators saying mm-hmm. that they were going to suspend over the walkouts. I know there was one, I saw something where a kid got in trouble for cutting a class for leaving, but then later found out that, okay, you had to sort of file in advance and that wasn't done or whatever. I don't know, but it seems like a lot of this will be worked out. I don't know.
I saw one Facebook post from a friend who posted her daughter's
cut slip
mm-hmm. with pride.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are those of us of a certain age who remember Vietnam
right.
enough to know uh-huh. that all those people are basically honored citizens in this country today who protested,
yeah.
even though I was listening on the radio coming into Oki from Muskogee. We don't burn our draft cards down in Main Street.
But in some cases, I thought it was interesting where the principals were saying that, well, okay, they're doing something wrong, so they have to be told that there are consequences. And but the consequence they gave them, well, you have to write a letter to an elected mm-hmm. official, or you have to mm-hmm. do something, right? And mm-hmm. so I thought, okay, well, that's all right, because, okay, they skip class. They actively, it's a, you know, a protest, a peaceful protest. So there's consequences for doing that. And but if you say, okay, the consequences make them do something, they will make it a teachable moment. That's okay.
And let's remember that it's not the school administration that often does this. Mm-hmm. It's these school boards. And these school boards hear from people of a political stripe mm-hmm. Who insist that they land on the school administration. And that's where the school administrators have to have a little guts.
But this is also them learning about civil disobedience and
yeah,
the consequences
absolutely.
Of civil disobedience.
And that's
all part of it.
On our letters to the editors page, there are very strong criticism of many of these students. So it is an active discussion mm-hmm. from grown-ups who say mm-hmm. these kids, we're paying good taxes for them to stay in school and learn, and they shouldn't be out protesting.
But
like
okay.
they misunderstand that learning is only taking place in the classroom and not outside in politically engaged environments.
We're getting those
apparently.
Kind of letters as well.
And that's why we have internship programs.
Yeah.
But
I mean, tell me you can take a course in the Legislative Gazette. Hey, I taught it for mm-hmm. 1,000 years. You go as an intern or the Legislative Gazette, or you go there, you learn more in 3 weeks than you've ever thought about learning in a classroom.
And what's interesting to me is I think that by their actions, we're all learning more. There's more attention to what the details of the legislation. You see the House passed legislation, the House of Representatives yesterday, and right away they talked about, well, look at what this is. This doesn't do anything. This, you know, they were out there discussing the details. How often do you see that discuss? So by their actions, we're all learning more. Sure. And by the way, the House passed legislation yesterday was insulting.
Norman wants to know, what happens if Sessions refuses to make the Mueller report public? Well, there are a number of ways that that goes. Mm-hmm. Number one, somebody leaks it. Number two, there is such hell raised about the fact that it's out there that the public demand becomes so incredible. Now, look, Sessions on at least one occasion, we know, recused himself because he knew he was in real trouble. And I would bet that he doesn't have the guts to do that.
But it's in the realm of possibility.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Okay. And Allison says, comment, Trump doesn't really want Sessions to fire McCabe because he doesn't, because when he doesn't fire him, Trump will have an excuse to fire Sessions. Ah, come on.
No, I think
he's had
just
lots of excuses to fire Sessions. He's afraid of the Senate.
I think this is the McCabe thing is all wrapped up in suggesting that the people in the FBI were against Republicans. Mm-hmm. And it just provides talking points. It's fodder for Fox News to talking points to raise these false suspicions because McCabe's wife was a Democratic candidate for office in Virginia. By all accounts, he did all the right things ethically in separating, you know, her campaign from his activities. They're just trying to create political fodder at his expense.
But that strategy, I think, that strategy, I don't think will work for the long term. We already see in those special elections. People care more about what happens to their access to health care. They care more about their children's future, access to education, affordability of education. They care more about union jobs. I mean, there are lots of things. Global safety, the environment. There are many other things that people care about.
We've heard from Roger, who I believe is to the left of center, who says, what does the panel, maybe I'm wrong, what does the panel think of the fact that Conor Lamb is against abortion, supports the Second Amendment and trade restrictions, and has called for change in the Democratic congressional leadership? So here's the question, because I'm going to guarantee you something. I'll guarantee it. You can write down my words. If the Democrats win the House of Representatives, there will be an impeachment. I don't know whether the Senate will convict, but there will be an impeachment. And that's why Trump was out there beating the drums, and that's why he was so scared about all of this stuff. So to Roger's point, I don't happen to agree with these positions of Conor Lamb. On the other hand, would I want one more vote to bring the House over to the Democratic side? From my perspective, yes.
So this is the talking points from the RNC and from the Speaker Ryan. So when you heard Speaker Ryan, he was asked to respond. He basically said, well, okay, if the Democrats want to run a Republican, then the Republican running as a Democrat's going to win. But that turned out not to be true. I mean, he is personally opposed to abortion, but not publicly, you know, not in
his
votes.
That's a very common
position. Right, very, very common, very common position. He was against the Republican tax package. He was against he's for the Obamacare and against the attacks on the Affordable Care Act. He's against the Republican attacks on Medicare and Medicaid. This is a false narrative. Kayleigh McEnany from the RNC was on today trying to push that. Ryan yesterday, this is a false narrative that won't work.
All right, we are out of time, but my thanks to Teresa and Judy and Vera and Alan, one of my favorite movies. thank you all very much. We'll be back with more program right after this.